Welcome to Press Start, game development and how to become one. I am Adam Aritza Smita, CEO for Ansanesia and Vice President of Indonesia Game Association, will be your host for this episode. In this podcast, we will talk about game development and how to start your career as a game developer. We will invite experts from the game industry to tell us their game dev journey to inspire us. I hope this podcast can help you start to be a game developer. And this podcast is brought to you by Indonesia Game Association and Goethe Institute Jakarta. And this episode is very, very special because today we're having a guest from Germany. Flo was joining Game Mixer, I think, around 2015. He visited Jakarta and Bandung. And in 2017, it's my turn to visit his office in Munich. So let's welcome Florian Smolka. Hi, Flo.
Hey there.
Hi, man. How are you?
Very good, very good. It's quite sunny day in Munich. So, looking forward to go outside later on.
Oh, it's sunny already?
Yeah.
All right. By the way, where are you right now?
I'm in Munich, Germany, yes.
In Munich, right? Are you working from home?
Right now, yeah. We have worked last year, started working remote in our spring, and then summer we went back to the office for a bit, but then later in autumn we got heavier numbers and then we worked remote again.
All right. So before we start our chit-chat, could you please give us a quick introduction about yourself? Where are you working right now? What's your role in game development? And maybe some title that you have been working on. Okay, go ahead.
All right. My name is Flo. And I've been working at MiMiMi Games for the past 9 years, I think. Mm. So, yeah, it's quite a long time. And the roles I have there is like doing the VFX and a bit of technical aspects like writing shaders, and right now I'm going a bit into Houdini and creating stuff in this program. And early on I did a lot of 3D modeling and a bit of scripting, but less so over the time. And the last title we released was Desperados 3. And before that, Shadow Tactics, Blades of the Shogun.
It's very popular, the Shadow Tactics.
Nice. I'm glad to hear that. And the game, I showed you guys back then when I visited Indonesia was the Last Tinker, City of Colors. Different type of game. The Shadow Tactics and Desperados are like real-time tactics games, and the other one was more like a adventure type of game.
Awesome. All right, now before we have a discussion, I'd like to start with quick games. So it's a rapid question, and you're not judged or scored by the question, so it's okay. Don't have to worry. So you just have to quickly answer anything that pop up in your head as fast as possible. Okay. Are you ready?
I try.
All right. The first question: do you remember what is the first title, the first game that you ever played?
I think so. Or there's a few, but this Patterson and Findus. It's like a comic book from a Swedish artist, and there was a game about it. Yeah, I played that as a kid.
What did you play it in Nintendo or in PC?
No, on PC. Yeah,
on PC. Yeah. All right. And next question: what was the last game that you played?
The last game was Destiny 2. Yeah, Destiny 2. Yeah.
All right. Next question: what's your favorite genre for a game?
Difficult. I really enjoy shooters with an RPG element on it. Yeah.
All right, shooter and RPG element. All right. Yeah, that's divining destiny, right?
Yeah.
All right. Next question: what is the most memorable thing that you remember from Indonesia?
Wow. Actually, the heat. The heat was killing me.
Sure. Yeah, that's quite normal. All right. This is the last question. Do you remember the title of the first game project that you have ever made by yourself?
By myself or like in working in the industry already?
I'm not sure. This is like the first time you make game ever. Okay, maybe you write it yourself or in the first studio you join?
Then I would say it's a project I did in the RPG Maker back then. But I lost the files, unfortunately. I would have loved to have a look at them now, but yeah, they got lost.
When was it? Do you remember?
I think I was around 12 or something. Yeah. So I'm turning 32 in 2 weeks, so about 20 years ago.
20 years ago. Yes. All right, that's awesome. So in this podcast, we would like to talk about the journey in video game industry. Most of our audience is new or maybe just want to start to jump in the industry. Mm-hmm. And maybe your story can help the others, inspire us how to start our game development career. So for the starter, do you remember the first time you want to become a game developer and what is the trigger?
I would say the first time the idea really formed in my head was when my mom actually found an ad in a newspaper. And it was like an ad for a university where you could study game design. And she showed it to me and said like, they have like a day of the open door where you can just visit and hear someone talk about the study. And we went there and I listened to the professor and I was like, this sounds amazing, basically. So I have to do this. Yeah.
So you went to that course to learn about game design?
Yeah. I studied there for 3 years and graduated with a Bachelor of Science.
All right. So right now you mentioned that your role is more on the visual effects. And what you studied is game design. So is it related to the course that you take or you learn other area by yourself?
Yeah, the title or the name of the study is a bit misleading because game design means something else in the industry, but it was more like general game development, what we did there. So I took my first VFX steps there. We had no specific lessons for that, but I just got thrown into the role, basically. We had like a small project we had to do, and then I was the guy doing the effects, and in the next project I was the guy too, and then it kind of made made a job out of it.
You also can in that course you also learn how to code or not?
At the beginning we all of us were in the same group, and then after 2 years four semesters, we got split up and into a more art focused and a more code focused way. And I went the art way, but I still learned to code a bit, which really helped me later on. It still helps me.
Yeah, that's true. Having to understand both worlds is very helpful. Yeah. All right.
Much.
So after you graduated, what did you do? I mean, did you try to create your own studios or did you apply to the studios?
I got it really easy. So in what was still in university in the third semester, I actually worked with a bunch of people to create a game. It's my first commercially released game called Da Vinci, where you have a hot air balloon and you have to draw the wind basically and let this hot air balloon fly to levels. A bit of a puzzle game. And yeah, it came out on the first iPad and stuff. And so these people, after they graduated, they opened a company, and this is the company I work in today, basically. So I just got off from university and was like, hey, we worked last time together and it really worked, and can we do this again? And they said yes. We have an open position, basically, and so that's how it started. So I never really applied, actually. So I just went there. I had it easy.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And maybe the audience can search the studio name. It's Me. M-I-M-I-M-I. The logo is a girl crying.
Yes.
But the game is like something totally different. Like the shadow tactic is very, 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 I mean, like very, very hardcore and very, very serious. But the logo is very, very fun. Could you a little bit tell us like why the company name is Mimimi and the logo is something like that, but the game is totally different style?
Oh, okay. I'll try to make it short. they came up with the name back in university while they're still studying, and they made like a project in university, and they had to come up with a team name, and they were like, okay, let's do Mimimi, because it basically means the crying all the time, and it kind of fits, or still fits, because we complain a lot about all types of things, so it makes sense in a way. And then later, when it got a serious company, well, the logo just, I don't know, it just fit. And at some point, we were thinking, hey, should we do something more serious, like for a company logo? But at this time, we already went to some conferences and with like T-shirts of this crying girl. And so it happened that everybody remembered this crying girl, and not really the company name or something, but they remembered, you guys are the ones with the crying girl, right? And so, well, we thought it's when it actually works, apparently. So why not keep it that way?
Yeah, I think that's smart. It's really stick. I mean, that's the one thing that I remember. And when you pitch in Jakarta, like 6 years ago, one thing that really remembered in my mind is the company logo.
Yeah,
and then it's working. All right. Okay. Now we're gonna talk about your role. You mentioned about your role is VFX. Can you explain a little bit what you usually do every day?
It's quite different. It depends basically also on where we are in the project. But doing VFX is basically like filling the world with life. It could be something like creating effects for certain types of spells, or just having trees fall from leaves fall from a tree, or like having dust whirlwinds in the desert or something, just to breathe life into the world. Because sometimes when you say VFX, everybody has like cool explosions and fireballs in their head, and it can be this too, but normally the work is a bit more subtle. But it's also really important, but a lot of times people don't necessarily notice the effects, but if they wouldn't be there, it would feel like really empty. So
usually, what's the process? I mean, are there usually like the programmer or the implemented the animation, and then you look at it and I can add something over there and there, or usually what's the process?
Also, this really depends, but I am quite free in my work, I would say. So if I see an animation and I say, this could use some effect to make it better, I usually can do this, but also we have like fixed planned stuff, of course, like in Shadow Tactics, we have this the samurai character, and if he has like this multi-kill skill where he charges forward and slashes his swords around him, and of course I have to like do certain effects for this, so it gets more appealing to look at and better readable.
I see. So this is more like in the animation department, or more in the like arts department usually, or this the same department?
It's I am located in the art department, but the cool thing is what I do is in the middle, basically, between art and technical stuff. It's a lot of visual knowledge involved, but also a bit of scripting or coding shaders, and this is what I really love, because I'm not like a 100% programmer or 100% super talented artist, but I fit right in the middle, basically.
I see. So you also work using like the game engine that you used, like in this Sedotetic, you use Unity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we still use Unity, yeah.
So you work on Unity, you draw the effects that you want to edit, and then you code it to the visual effects system in the Unity, something like that?
We have right now we have a system in place so that effects are a bit relatively easy to implement. It's just I have to drag it somewhere in the right spot, and then it plays on an animation or what else. But the scripting part, I would say, is right now more like focused on shaders, like writing shaders. But I guess this will change a bit too, because everything is shifting more into the visual scripting things. So like dragging around notes and not necessarily writing shader code anymore.
Maybe our listener still not understand the concept of shader. Can you please explain a very simple way what is shader to our audience?
That's
okay.
A shader basically tells objects how they should look, like how lighting affects these objects. So let's say you modeled a teacup, and at first you just have this teacup, and you have to tell the game engine what should it do with it, how should it light it, and how the reflectivity is, or is it transparent, or are there stains on it, or whatever. And so, the most simple shader code is basically the color is red, in a way.
Yes.
But it gets a lot more complex, of course.
True. So to be a VFX guy, you need to have a combination of skill of a little bit of art and a little bit of technical, right?
It definitely helps to have solid knowledge in both areas, but it's okay if you're a bit more on the technical side or a bit more on the art-focused side. There's some leeway to it, I would say.
So if there's no, there's no requirement for you to be able to good at art and coding, so in your opinion, what makes a good VFX artist?
Well, as I said, it certainly helps to have found knowledge in both areas. But what else is important? You need a good feel for timing and animation principles in general. So how should stuff move, and how you create impact, and how to time stuff that it really immerses you into it, and what looks cool, and what type of colors are what type of emotions matches certain colors, like red is for warning and danger and stuff, and yellow could be like a poison or envy or something like that. So these things are important.
How do you usually train this skill, this sense of, like you mentioned, timing, the animation, the impact? How do you usually get better at this?
That's a really good question. I would say, look at stuff you like, actually. So look at effects you think are cool and dissect them. So what makes them cool? How do they work? Yeah. Or just, ask people. So a lot of people in the industry are, most of the time, they're really approachable. So if you have a good question and you don't know the answer to, just try to write them.
All right. Awesome. So you have been working as a VFX for like 9 years, and can you maybe tell us like what is the most exciting part of your journey around 9 years? Which parts do you think like, wow, this is like the happiest moment in my life being a game dev?
Wow. Such a tough question.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Okay. Wow.
Or maybe not one moment. Maybe like the game that make me feel very happy, or something along the journey, that the process that you think, this is the one that I really enjoy.
It's difficult to answer because there's a lot of high points in each project, and they are really different all the time. But I really enjoyed Shadow Tactics as a game because I liked the setting, the old Edo Japan setting, and I learned a lot while doing research for that, and also while doing Desperados. One moment comes to mind when right at the beginning I had to model like a train engine, and I was like, okay, this should be even easy enough, just model a train engine. So I went on researching, and then I got stuck into the whole how steam trains work and what is the history behind them. And so it took me, I think, about 2 weeks total to model this one train engine. Not because it was so difficult to model, but I really wanted to understand how it works. And yeah, this is a really interesting part about game development in general, because you have to recreate certain elements of the real world and make them believable. So,
and the third model is for the Desperados, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not for Shadow Tactics, right?
No. But also, more into thinking VFX. So, if something has to explode, so what one explosion is not like the other. So you have to keep in mind what is the stuff that is actually exploding. Is it like oil, or is it like black powder? And how do these different elements really expand and explode? So there's a lot of stuff you can learn. Yeah. Makes me happy in general, I would say. So like learning new things all the time.
Yes, that's cool. By the way, I have my personal question is like, your last game when you visit in Indonesia is like more adventure games, and then after that you make an RTS game, and the second also RTS. Is it correct if right now your company focusing on RTS, and if so, what makes you change from the adventure type into RTS?
Okay. So first of all, it's actually an RTT. It's a real-time tactics game.
Oh, real-time tactics game, yes.
It's quite similar, yeah. So I honestly cannot really say that the one what made us change in this direction. I think this was just one idea we had lying around, like doing a type of like commandos games, but with ninjas. And so, we pitched it, and then we did the project. And it's when you do one game and it is remotely successful financially, it makes sense to kind of stick to that and improve on things you did wrong the last time, and not to jump in a different genre altogether, because doing, I don't know, a first person shooter for the next game is is like really different. We have to do so much different stuff, and so you can carry over some of your tech you did for the last games. So it just makes a lot of sense to do a similar game after that.
Yes, that's quite smart. Yes.
So, and that's what we are doing right now. Our next project will also be RTT again.
All right. That's awesome. By the way, talking about, you mentioned about carrying the same something that already working from Shadow Tactics into Desperados. Do you remember what kind of the thing that already works and what the improvement you put in the Desperados, learning from the Shadow Tactics?
Well, you should ask that our coders. But
from your side, from your department, is there any improvement that you saw? Hey, this is not working in our last game. We need to improve this on the second game.
Well, one thing I did, I had way too many individual shaders in Shadow Tactics, so I wrote like a standard VFX shader for Desperados to make stuff easier and more flexible. Other things, yeah, it's a lot of base tech that got carried over, like how the camera works stuff like that. But this is a more code type of question in general. For me, the VFX part, yeah, it's the standard shader I did. And then not like physical assets, but more like the learnings you carried over. So stuff I did in Shadow Tactics and what worked and what didn't work and how can I improve on certain elements. So that's
I think like when you're working like almost the typical genre, I think there's a lot of pipeline that you can improve to deliver faster and more efficient.
Sure.
And I read your article in Gamma Sutra regarding the Shadow Tactics as a, like some kind of like Final Fantasy, like your last project, you almost go bankruptcy, something like that. Can you tell a little bit story about that and what you learned to manage that in the future?
This was of course also a happy moment that we didn't go bankrupt. So if you if you want to read up on that, you can post the Gamma Sutra link, I think. In short, how to summarize that, and especially I'm not our founder who has a more deep understanding of what went wrong, and to make it easy, it's we learned that we need more, I don't know, a money cushion, basically, so we can survive for longer, even though our current project takes a longer time, but we don't get more money from publishers or investors, so we need a bigger saving fund, basically, for rainy days to survive longer. And it's a hard question for me to answer on the spot.
There's an article in Gamma Sutra. We can put it on the link on the description. I think that's a really interesting journey that you have done doing this game with the full effort of the team, and then it become like your success games, and that's really awesome. And by the way,
it was a real hard moment. Also, it was a it's weird to just release a game and actually to go to a award ceremony where we won quite a few of prizes.
A lot of awards. Yeah. I saw you won a lot of awards. Yes.
But at the same time, in the back of your head, it's like, so, okay, maybe I don't have a job in a few weeks. So, yay. But it turned out to be a bright future. So.
Yes. After that, you get a publisher for the Desperados, right?
Yes.
Talking about publisher, not many in Indonesia, not many publishers known about the games in our country, so not many game developers get published by a publisher. Can you maybe share us a little bit that you know how is this working with publisher usually do? Do they like involve in your creative, or they just fund a game and marketing for you? And how do you usually it works?
Also would be a great question for our CEO, but I'm trying to explain what I know about it. It's quite different. It really depends on the publisher itself. With Desperados, we had basically all of the creative freedom THQ Nordic gave us. There was like one small moment where our writers had something envisioned, and they said like, okay, no, don't want to pursue the story in this way. We would like to change you to make changes and go in a different way. But this was basically one of the only times where they actually told us what we should do. So we were really really free creatively, but it really depends. There's a lot of different publishers out there, and the tip general I would say is just find the right one for you and your company, because it's not as easy as like bad publishers or good publishers. Even a very good publisher could not be like the one for you and the game you are developing. So that's something to keep in mind, I would say.
Yes, true. Yeah, but the thing, I mean, like the ecosystem is different, right? I mean, in Germany, you have like more accessible to the big publisher. You have like Gamescom over there. You have like a Maze Festival where you can gather a lot of publishers. Maybe in Indonesia, they need to fly to Germany to get them. But I think because of COVID, like now, every event goes online and it better the access is better also for everyone to get in touch with them.
Yeah, I would say so too. Yeah.
All right. Get back to you again. I'm just curious regarding your projects, and that article really, 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 really triggers me to talk about it. Back about you. Do you have any moments that something like, man, why did I do this? Or like a failure that you did in your project, and how do you bounce back from then, and what lesson? Perhaps as simple as, I didn't back up the project and it's all gone and I need to rewrite. Do you remember something like that?
That did not happen, fortunately. I really thought about it, but I don't have like specific failures in mind. It's more more like general stuff. So I failed to make compromises in the past. So I'm a bit too much of a perfectionist, so it's really hard for me to just say, okay, this is done now, it's good enough, and keep on. And it's still not easy, but I'm getting better and better at it. But the thing about that is when you don't know how to do it the smart way, or if you fail to do it the smart way, you compensate it most of the time with just working hours and put more work in it. And, this is not good for your health. just keep that in mind. Don't push yourself too hard and listen to your body. The dangerous part is you think you notice it when you don't have enough energy anymore, and it really affects you in a bad way, like working too much. But the dangerous thing is you notice it like a lot later when it's too late, because after Shadow Tactics, I put a lot of hours into Shadow Tactics, and after we were done, I was like, "Hey, cool! I'm done with the project now. I have time again. How cool is that?" And then I was, I didn't want to do anything with friends or stuff. I just was basically like really low on energy and lying around and, well, kind of, yeah, drained.
Oh, really?
And I wasn't really expecting that. I was like, okay, yeah, well, back to my normal life. Everything is cool. But then the overtime really took a toll on me. It's not too bad. A lot of other people have it way worse, but it kind of educated me in this regard that you really have to be careful. And I was careful about working much because I was like, okay, I can work much. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But then I need to sleep a lot. So I have to, keep it healthy in some ways. But well, it didn't really work out. So I was really drained still at the end.
Yeah. How do you describe, I mean, like, how hard did you work when you like try to perfect everything? I mean, did you not sleep at all, or like you at office almost a week or something like that?
No, as I said, I really kept an eye on my sleep schedule. So I basically slept at least 8 hours a day, but I worked for long hours basically. So I worked long into the night, which was also a bit difficult for me because I'm more like a night owl. So I am really efficient like in the night. So I tend to work longer because I am quite productive then. So it's kind of hard to balance in a way, but yeah, you get better at it.
I see.
And one other point is about like failures, so to speak, is I tend to compare myself too much to people on the internet, because it's really easy on Twitter or something to see all these amazing artists like doing all this crazy stuff, and you're like, how are you guys doing this? Like, it's just not possible. And but the thing is, like, with all the social media, you don't have the full story behind it. Maybe they really are struggling too, and working way too much themselves and having health issues, but you only see the positive outcome of their work. And so, yeah, just it's cool to look on all these platforms and see other artists and get inspired by that, but don't try to compare yourself like too hard with them.
Yes, that's really, really important, yeah, because sometimes you feel like, wow, this guy is God. And you try to, how can I be like that? Yes.
And but we are all different. So, yeah.
What you usually do? I mean, do you also share your works on the internet when you see someone is, when you try to compare, wow, this guy is so good, I want to make something like this. What you usually do for you to, I mean, like, does it has an effect for you? Like, oh, because like this, I need to push myself further or something like that.
I always would like to post more of my work online, but a lot of times it's not possible because of some NDAs. I'm not allowed to post stuff. And when I finally am allowed to post stuff, I don't have time anymore or something like that. So it's very difficult. I hope this will change a bit in the future. But I would do that more.
How about the community of the support system? Do you have like a community of like game developers in your cities, or like maybe some artists and VFX guys on your city that you can talk and share or something like that?
Many different circles I'm in, like, yeah, the Munich Game Dev Circle, or like a tiny group of German VFX artists, with really like a family atmosphere. We are just basically five people, but this is really cool because in some of the world bigger online communities, you tend to be a bit afraid to ask questions most of the time, because like, oh, is this question really relevant or is this just too stupid? And well, the answer always is like, there are no stupid questions, just ask them anyway. But in a smaller group, it's easier to just ask something right out. It's well the how you say the it's just easier to ask a smaller question in a small crowd.
Is it also happen? I think I thought that the culture that make us quite shy to ask maybe like I think I thought that this was Indonesian problem. Maybe because of like we usually feel like more inferior in terms of like in the game industry and also the language barrier. That's why we try usually quite shy or maybe like afraid to ask. But is it also happen in your situation, like in Germany?
Sure, but yeah, there's a lot of cultural differences. I would say, like, I cannot really say too much about it because I don't have like it's more subjective feel. I don't have like any science data to back
this up. You don't have a paper and research about it, right?
But yeah, it might as well be like. But then I think it's really important for you guys maybe that are a bit more, like you said, shy about it, and that you just try to ask your questions anyway. And on the other side, like other communities have to be like more open for you. So you feel more comfortable to ask your questions. So it goes both ways. So the ones who are like more strong in communication and more upfront should be more open and welcoming to the ones who are like a bit more shy, let's say.
Yeah, so for everybody who's listening right now, don't be shy. So you can just go out and ask about anything, but make sure you have a good question. Don't ask something that you can find on Google, but ask something very, very good.
Just make sure it's not like the first hit on Google. So that's, as I said, there are no like stupid questions, but take a moment to research for yourself. And if you don't find anything, then just ask the question. And this is like something I really like about the game industry in general. Like most people are quite approachable and helpful. So yeah, there's a lot of what I use a lot these days is Discord. And there's a lot of good Discord servers for all the different communities, like Blender or something for VFX artists or like the Houdini stuff. Yeah, and Unity. And
it's friendly, like for newbie, for everyone to ask the question. They're not getting bullied or something like that, right? If you ask,
well, it really depends on the on the different communities. But the ones I'm in seem to be quite welcoming. Yeah.
That's really, really awesome. By the way, Flo, I saw that in your website you already announced your new title. Can you tell us a little bit about it, or is it still NDA?
It's still very much secret. The only things are like it will be an RTT game again, and that's about it. Like you can read up on it's named Project Süß Kartoffel because we have like our projects internally have for the past past two games, they had like vegetable code names. So Desperados Desperados was Kartoffel, which means potato, and the game Shared Tactics didn't have one. Yeah,
oh, right.
So it started with Desperados, and right now this project is called Süßkartoffel, which means sweet potato.
How do I spell it? Süßkartoffel?
Damn, yeah, that's really hard. It's a German word with a lot of unknown signs in it.
Yeah,
but I think you can find it on our webpage.
yes. I saw that you're going to self-publish this game, and it was supported by Kowloon Knights, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, I think next year, maybe like after you finish the project, I will ask you what's the difference between working with publisher and then self-published, because this is something that a lot of developers has been talking, right? This is the bright side working with publisher, and this is the bright side when you self-publish. I think that will be something that I'm going to ask you if we have this podcast again two years again.
Yeah, it would be really an interesting challenge for us, because we always had publishers and we are really grateful for them. Mm. But right now we really want to try this self-publishing and make all the mistakes that you can make on your own.
By the way, if you cannot tell about this project further, you can just give us no comment. But my question is, the Shadow Tactic and the Desperados, that are very, very serious art style and very, very like maybe quite far from the Mimimis logos, but from only one icon that I can find in this page I'm not sure what is this. Is this a potato or is this a red?
It's a sweet potato. Yeah.
Sweet potato, right? From the one image, it gives us the signal that the art will be more cartoonish. Am I correct or not? Or you cannot say anything?
I cannot comment on the art style. But we have a lot of these icons made in the same style. So
So it doesn't translate anything about the game yet.
Well, it could, but might as well it could not.
That's smart answer. It may be yes or maybe not.
You will see.
Flo, by the way, it's almost an hour. <It's>, wow. time flies. So for the closing statement, so there's a lot of like new developers here or someone who wants to jump in this industry. Can you share us that your tips or tricks for someone who would start their career as a game developer from your part?
Okay. I took some notes on that point because it's a really important point, I would say, because the new people are our future, so it's important.
True. That's true.
So one thing is you don't have to be perfect at one thing in particular. So it's okay to be the one guy who's like, one person who is like perfect in sculpting, I don't know, something. But it's totally okay to be a more a generalist and have more professions you like and are somewhat good at. And it really depends on the company you work for or the work you do. But it's a lot of people are afraid that they are not good enough in one specific thing, so they are not good at all. But that's not true. Can be more of a generalist. And then, of course, it's really, I cannot stress this enough. So you are not alone when you think you're not good enough. That's and it's still true for like most seniors. They still deal with some kind of imposter syndrome. So that's, you're not alone out there, and it gets better, but I think it never really goes away fully. So don't be afraid. A lot of people with more experience, they still will tell you that they have no clue what they are doing. They just have like more experience, like being clueless. Yeah.
So, more experience of being clueless. Nice.
Because you always think, ah, you got up there, like working in the industry for like over 10 years and stuff. Mm. You must be like, oh, amazing. And these are also just people. So, so what else? Expect doing a lot of not so excited work. When you start like working in the game in the games industry, you kind of have this like wonderful image of always doing like amazing stuff. And honestly, you do amazing stuff in games, but it's still hard labor mostly. And well, so not everything you do always is cool. You will have boring days. Mm. So just a heads up. And yeah, one thing that is a bit hard right now, I would say, with COVID and all this remote work and no in-person conferences, but try to network as much as you can and like making friends along the way and like doing something like we did. Like if you have the chance to visit other game dams in another country, then yeah, jump on that and do it.
Don't be shy.
Yeah, don't be shy. And yeah, also ask for help. It's really important. And it helps to, well, we don't have to do, well, it's not worth it that everyone makes the same mistakes. We can learn together and avoid mistakes. So get smarter in the end. And so help each other. If you like have more experience, help someone with less out and the other way around. And ask for your portfolio to be reviewed by, well, someone with experience. I know this is a hard step. It always is hard to show your work to someone and let it be criticized, but it is important so you can really get objective view on your own work. This is my last point and the most important, I would say. Be kind to yourself, as I said, like watch your health. We all have our different limits. The people next to you might put in all of the work hours and are totally fine, but this might not be applied to you and this is fine. You're not weaker. You're still amazing, but your limits are just on a different level. And if for some reason your work environment doesn't let yourself be you, it's not the right one for you. So
wow, so that's interesting. That's really interesting. Well, we have a very nice discussion, Flo. Thank you so much for coming to this podcast.
Thank you for having me. All right.
That's it for today, I guess. I hope this session can give all of you guys insight and courage to press start your career as a game developer. And I'm Adam Andres Smita. Keep playing games, start making games. Thank you, Flo. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's really nice having you here.
Thank you. That was very cool.